Hello, everybody. I'm Regina, and I'm grateful, very grateful, Al-Anon member. My home group is Saturday Women's AFG in Iowa City. Here is in Iowa. We meet at 320 East College Street, Iowa City at noon on Saturdays. It's a very peaceful meeting with a lot of long-term experienced members of Al-Anon, and I believe that there is lots of higher power in that room. I want to thank the committee for all of the work they have done to put together this event. I can imagine how huge is that, and to inviting me to share my experience. It was very nice to see yesterday how many young people are working on their sobriety, to see so many young people in this room. So I was asked kind of to talk on concept of higher powers, people struggling to with that, especially in the beginning of recovery, as I was struggling myself. I was born in Ukraine 2 years after my parents got married. My mom told me that at the wedding, my father's mom, my grandmother, was hovering around him like a helicopter, trying to keep him from drinking. And eventually, he just got drunk and collapsed. That didn't really ring any bell, I guess, with my mom, because she herself was coming from the alcoholic family. Her stepfather was an alcoholic, and as far as I could see at my family tree, men would be an alcoholics and women would be like crazy Al-Anon, as they call them here. And as I think for AA, the key word would be drink alcohol. For Al-Anon, it's a control. I think I was control freak when I was 5 already. My mom had to go back to work, and I was basically left babysitting my newborn brother. I grew up in, so to speak, a middle-class Soviet Union family. My mom was a school teacher, and my father was an electrical engineer. He's a very bright and intelligent man, especially when it comes to technical specifics. He was just genius. He is genius. Companies wanted him, and we were moving, and the family would have lots of benefits from his work and his positions. For me, it was very sad to observe, to see how this disease took everything from him, how he has got degraded from having those high job positions 2 years, basically living on the street. And this is a very sad part of story of mine. So my mom divorced him when I was about 20 years old, and that was just became insane. The whole living at home with all of those blackouts, and he had hallucinations, hallucinating basically from the drinking. And I don't know, my regular routine before going to sleep was hiding knives, scissors, and all of that stuff, because I didn't know. He had done some kind of stuff, nearly like burned the house, and it was obviously that he did not do that on purpose, and it's just a disease of an alcoholism. When he left the family, he was bouncing around with different women, and then eventually ended up being homeless. I used to have a lot of shame about that, and guilt also. I wasn't even realizing that I'm carrying that guilt. Anytime I would see homeless men, I would start crying, and I didn't know why. And when I was doing support with my sponsor, that realization came that actually I'm kind of seeing my father in that, and that's why I'm crying. And another thing, it's obviously the whole dysfunction going on in the family, and I was told by my mother that my father is homeless because of me, because well, I was the one who brought up idea that that is not going to work. We eventually going to die here if it continues like this. And so I was carrying also that guilt, and I was. It was like a huge revelation working with my sponsor, and she explained to me that that's kind of nonsense. How can a child be guilty in somebody's addiction? That was just an addiction, a disease. I haven't spoken to my father for 10 years after that, and I had a lot of anger regarding that, along with guilt. And the program was, because of working program, that just got released. The education about the disease. 2 years ago, he contacted me, and it started very nice. We were talking about probably 3 weeks on the phone, and I was thinking, wow, what kind of miracle is that? Did you get into some kind of recovery? What's going on? He would be calling me every other day. We would be just talking, and then in 2 weeks, he started asking money from me. And then I've been in Al-Anon at that time, and I've heard those stories. That's why I've got suspicious a little bit. And I didn't buy that because I knew all the manipulative stuff and all of that is a part of the disease. This time I did not have that anger, like that huge, as I would be probably outraged or I don't know. Of course I cried about that because I've got like a hope that I have got my father or something like this. So, but then, yeah, okay, it's just a disease. Okay, back to myself. So this, the household was dysfunctional, just probably any alcoholic household. And at a very early age, I have learned how to dissociate from my feelings and the reality. And I was escaping into a fantasy world. And my brother did actually too. My mom got called one time to school, and the teacher was complaining that he is spacing out at, during the class. And when I asked him like privately later on, so what's up? What are you thinking about? Why are you not not participating? And he said, well, I am imagining that I am a cosmonaut and I am there like in a space. So he was literally spacing out. And you know, it's a part of coping. The reality is too difficult. So if we were prohibited, of course, of any kind of using substance or whatever, it was like a big no-no since we had this problem with my father. That was a coping mechanism to dealing with all of this, what's going on at home. So the family disease of alcoholism is also about isolation to me. I don't know if it's like, is it using strategy of divide and conquer? As more it progressed, as more isolated I grew, as well as my family did. There was a lot of shame about myself, about my father, about my family, about everything. It's just like continuous, overwhelming feeling of shame. Because it's kind of also, you know, with all of this unpredictability of this disease. So, we never knew in what conditions my dad is going to come home and what's going to happen next. There was a lot of broken windows. I don't know, dishes flying around. They were yelling at each other. It's kind of normal every evening routine, and blood, like, I don't know. It's just, well, that kind of was my my world at the time. And in the same time, my mom would be managing, like, to pretend on the contrary that everything is okay, presenting that nice picture outside when this all of this madness was going on at home. That, and I think it's ignorant, because everybody knew. It's just like, it's obvious. After a while, this isolation thing turned into madness. I think, according to my mom, we all had to stay home. We were prohibited bringing any friends to home or going to anybody after school. And if she would know that I did go somewhere and my brother did go, then we would get beaten quite brutally for that. So I figured out that this is an unsafe thing to do, and I was a good girl. So I just stopped altogether doing any social life, I guess. My brother was a little bit more rebellious. I think he continued to choose to have some friends in his life, and that became also like a evening routine. My mom would be beating my brother for that he went to somebody's home. And now as an adult, he has those huge scars on his back after those beatings up. And it's just, to me, as now I know that she wasn't bad. As a mom, she was trying to do her best. It's just the madness of this disease was flourishing in the house. So with all of those circumstances, I grew very isolated in school. Eventually, my schoolmates stopped inviting me to birthday parties because I never invited them back. I think that was my conclusion. And I had only one school friend. We were hanging out all the time together, and her father was apparently a military officer, which made perfect sense later on, that living with somebody from military or an alcoholic or mental health problems person, disability person, it leads to all the same codependency thing. As an adult, now I'm still working on my social anxiety type of thing. I am getting overwhelmed quickly by being in crowded places and just being around people, and I need to have a break so often. Maybe as a result of that, I also have some perfectionism issues, which is one of the typical Al-Anon issues as well. I dived in into study with all of my head and ended up being an excellent student in the school, and I got a grant for getting into one of the kind of coolest universities in the country. I was very proud about myself. Even though in the same time I was so much out of touch with my feelings and had no idea what is it I wanted to do really. So I ended up studying that engineering stuff, and then ended up not liking it, but that's another story. So I graduated from that, went to job, got married, got divorced. The relationships is just like how they, I've heard later on in the rooms that I've got that special picker. So if you would give me 1,000 men, I would pick one who is an alcoholic, of course. At the time, I looked very calm and serene outside. I look like a calm. People say typically, what? That. But basically, emotionally, it was just emotional shutdown. There was a tornado going on inside. A lot of suppressed anger, guilt, tons of shame, and etc. You name it. Maybe I would became. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I would become an alcoholic, but I had that strange reaction to substance. So, well, I tried. After 2-3 glasses of wine, I would throw up basically. Any like a tobacco hookah stuff, it takes me the same to the restroom. And once I had to do a surgery, and I've got this anesthesia thing, they put me asleep, and I went to coma. And wake up like later than I was supposed to be waking up, and I got scared at the hospital, and they kind of told me that I am allergic to that kind of substance. So I just left coping on my with my fantasy world. Well, I was taking a lot of some kind of non-prescriptive antidepressant you can get in a pharmacy as much as you can, and the amount I was taking, that would probably put asleep a horse, but really I was taking a lot, and it's kind of, I was functioning perfectly fine. It's just like was my way to calm down myself. So eventually, by the age of 27, my body started falling apart. I've got a physical condition which nobody could figure out what's coming from. And by that time, I was going through a lot of doctors, and they would be making, you know how they call it, that medical research on me, making all kind of... Exactly. So, I was devastated because nobody would tell me what's going on with me, and I had that terrible pain, and was getting prescribed a lot of medicine, and eventually got an allergy to that. All of this, those pills I had to be taking, and like an eczema on my skin. And but the scariest thing that eventually all of the stuff they were prescribing stopped working, and just my internal, the organs start bleeding, and the problem was that I had such a terrible pain. Nobody knew what it's coming from, so it was like a desperation, and I was kind of suicidal by that time. I wanted to live, but living with that kind of pain, I don't know, and when there is no solution and nobody knows what, well, oh, okay. So eventually, once my doctor told me that I probably needed therapy, tried therapy. So I got to a therapist, and I was diagnosed with a high level of depression. And she basically told me that I have a depression like 92-year-old woman. I don't know why 92, why not 95 or 91, but still curious. I would like to say that my recovery started in Al-Anon, but unfortunately it started in a mental health clinic, which I was sent like a kind of rehab type of thing, and I was very ashamed about it that I had to go to this place. I took a taxi driver, and was really hoping there won't be any signs, or I don't know, we kind of would arrive maybe to a black entrance, and when we arrived there was a which sign like psychiatric clinic, city was welcome. And you know, miraculously enough, that the problem actually was here, and after started working all of that stuff, the symptoms eventually gone, not completely. So, and I knew that I need to really take care of, about my mental health. Otherwise, I'm just getting physical pain. And what is that? It's just that whenever I expressed anger and all of that stuff that was boiling inside. And when people like outraged, they basically expressing that, and nobody knows what is better: either suppressing it like that and killing myself from inside, or making some damage outside, I don't know. Meanwhile, I had that, you know, very strong urge to move. And later on, I have learned in Al-Anon that they call it geography here. I was about to move to Australia, and then I've got paperwork ready and I passed professional exam for that, but ended up here. That was kind of also strange and miraculous thing in the same time, but I guess now that just we're, I'm there where my higher power needs me to be. Maybe I need to be here for some reason. So my Al-Anon recovery started in New York. And the funny thing, I found that meeting online in the church, and they call it also, like, you know, in Al-Anon doing the same thing and trying to get different results. So I was going to that church, first time came at the church, and it's a kind of huge church on the Queens Boulevard, and they told me there is no Al-Anon meeting in this church. Next week, I came to the same church, to a different entrance, and asking again the same question, because, well, what I'm seeing on my Google map. So it took me 3 times to come to this same church, and eventually one person told me that there is another church around the corner, so probably it's there. And I went there, and there was an Al-Anon meeting. And that was just perfect for me, because nobody would kind of touch me, or I don't know, I mean, don't stick to me, didn't stick to me. I was a very shy person, I am shy. I wasn't comfortable to share. I was just sit in the corner, listen, got home, come next week. But what's important, they give me this book, How Al-Anon Works for Families and Friends of Alcoholics. To me, it's like, I think, first thing to read, Al-Anon Bible. It basically explains the disease of alcoholism, and I just read it really quickly. I couldn't stop reading, and it was like, really, why I didn't know all of this stuff before, and I was getting kind of relief and I don't know understanding that there is actually it's not any it isn't anybody's fault. There is no fault anybody's and all of that. It's just a disease and how it works, and recognizing all of the patterns of that in my family. Before I got to Al-Anon, my God was kind of, even didn't realize that that I believe in God, but that was a punishing God, that I had to be a good girl, do the right thing, and then it's going to be okay. But if I would do something bad, I would be just punished, and that was my God. That's not, certainly not a God I would go for help or understanding, or I don't know. Al-Anon step work opened up the gate of the whole new concept of God for me, and I actually, doing the step work, I have realized that I have the same character defects as my father does, which I was very angry about. I mean, all of those character defects, and found out where this different sides of the same coin, just basically coming out from the same disease of alcoholism. When I started work, my sponsor told me that first 3 steps are fundamental, and the rest are built on those 3 steps. And if I didn't get those, then it's not going to work. She gave me, recommended me to read this book, little book, As We Understood. And the whole book, it basically talks about higher power, different, it's a sharing of different people on their perception of higher power. And this is what I like the most about this program, that it gives so much freedom. It doesn't tell me what God do I have to have. It gives me a choice, and if you're coming from specific religious background or you're agnostic, or it's just a lot of freedom. You can choose one higher power for yourself. Just the most important thing to find that out. Today I have a very different world I used to live. I believe in my higher power is intelligent universe, And I don't really have any preference how to call it, God, Goddess. Some people prefer to be a woman, some people like to be the man. For me, it's just it's here, it's everywhere. It's in plants, animals, planets, and in other humans. It's just in the air. It surrounds me. And if I need a help, I just need to ask, and I need to be open to listen the voice. Because to me, the whole matter of being humble to the voice, because I am I'm very self-righteous. I know always what to do and what is right for everybody. That was kind of difficult to. First of all, I need to realize that, and it was kind of insightful moment that I'm so controlling. And sometimes I'm still controlling my higher power. But that's a good thing to kind of notice that and be gentle with myself. And I know that my higher power, it's a huge loving power, which creates everything out of that great love. And it loves everything and everybody. And to me, God, higher power, it's love. It's just that loving energy. Now, it was at times I was struggling with the question, if it loves me, why, if it loves other people, why it makes people suffer, or why it lets me suffer, let other people suffer. And the answer was, to me, how I understood that, that it actually didn't, it didn't make me suffer, it doesn't make anybody suffer. It is, I am the one who is causing suffering to myself and to other people. Out of being out of touch with that higher power, with that loving source, because what is here, it's not loving. And why would, the other big question was, why, if it's so loving, why it would let me suffer, let other people suffer, why all of this injustice going on the planet? And my understanding of things that love also is freedom. So, and God is a loving parent, not the self-righteous and controlling one, gives me choice. Do I want to join that loving power, or do I choose to do my own thing out of here? And this is where problems come from. Another thing I understood, that there is no really a good or bad thing, black or white, is it's a one continuum of things just happening, and a lot of shadows of gray in between. And I don't know what the negative event might turn out on the other side or in the future. Of course, I was very unhappy, I was very unhappy when I was hurting and nearly suicidal and was thinking that I'm going to die. And at the moment, I didn't think that was a positive thing, but it turned out that this really thing, it very took me to recovery. And this thing, suffering, made me humble. When before, if somebody tell me that I need a therapy or some kind of this God type of thing, I would probably tell, well, where to go with that stuff. Really. But having that pain, having been that suicidal, it made me like, okay, what is that you want me to do? And when I met my sponsor, and she had those, she would be telling me how we're going to do steps, I was totally ready to do just about anything what she says. Wouldn't I have that pain? I don't know how much longer it would take me, probably bounce around with all of my dysfunction and craziness going on through my head. Also, I believe that everybody is born with a certain group kind of qualities, talents, strengths, and weaknesses. And my job in this life to figure out what my strengths and talents, and what is that I meant to do in this life. And because of higher power's loving power, it actually wants me to do what I what are my greatest strength and talents are. And if I am aligned with that, then I am actually will be flourishing. And this is what they say: if you how not to have an even single day of work in your life is just to do for work what you love to do. In this example I have, it's kind of works great for me. If to look at body cells having their own assignments in this body, every cell has its own function. It was born meant to do something like in kidneys and liver and brain. It has those specific type of strength or like a function to do. And all of these cells working together making this system works function. And if one of those cells decides that, no, I don't want to do what I have assigned to do here and I'm going to do my own thing, then they call it malignancy in the medical world. And that's why I'm praying a lot. And my prayer has changed since that tremendously. So instead of asking my higher power, what is it I want, or what is it I need, help me with this and that, I am asking, what is it you want me to do? Give me a sign. And in the beginning, I was, my belief wasn't that much strong. I was just asking my higher power to help me to believe into you, into higher power, because I'm struggling. And I was asking, you know, higher power, I don't understand hints really. I need a very certain message in front of my face, big letters, please. I think that's a kind of willingness to go along with that. It also takes to be humble, really humble. So I pray on my knees in the morning, and I think that it is very different prayer rather than just like a praying going around in my head. Than actually staying on my knees and praying, because I think it's almost like a feeling from the body, kind of giving a sign to my brain that I'm humble, staying on my knees, and I'm willing to listen to your voice. And how do I get really in touch with that voice of higher power and higher power's will? So to me, higher power talks through feelings, and those are very subtle. And it is impossible to hear if there is a lot of mental noise going on in my head. And what the program does, it clears out that mental noise. The steps prior to 11. In step 11, it's basically about meditation, getting quiet and start listening. And when I started doing steps, I've got very several insights. Basically, they call it spiritual awakening, and I was having like waves of those awakenings. One day I was going to work, and it was just a regular day, and all of a sudden I saw that beautiful sky, which always was there on the same way to work, and I never noticed that. And the thing was that the beauty of this sky, it literally scared me. My reaction was like, I looked up and was like, oh, really? And I called to my sponsor, like, I had this, what is that? And she said, well, congratulations, that's an awakening, and you're going to get more, she said, and also maybe the first awakenings, they are very intense, and later on you kind of get used to that, but it's kind of coming. Another awakening I had, so I realized that this geography thing, moving, I actually never felt home. And that made me move around the places. It's interesting, if you don't know it, you don't know it. How it feels safe to be safe and just here. And it also happened like this unexpectedly. I don't know why I was at the doctor's office in Iowa City, sitting waiting for my appointment, and all of a sudden this feeling like home, and it's the same reaction. Really? And then it's gone, but I wanted it. It felt so good. It just felt so good to be here and now and feeling that security and kind of being safe, I don't know. And I knew the time that, well, okay, it's gone because that creeping in voice came in and like, so what, you're going to stay here if you're feeling home here, like no moving anymore, that's boring. it was keep coming back, and I knew that it's working, just working that way. another one thing also, so I was trained, since I was trained so good to stay out of my feelings and eventually staying out of my body. My previous life was like, I was having a lot of bruises around my legs, on like, I don't know, hands, and I never knew where did they come from, because I was so much not present, not in this moment. I was continuously bumping around into the furniture and never even noticing that. And my first kind of this awakening to my body sensations was happened on the ocean, like staying with my feet in the sand and feeling that wave on my soles, like taking out the sand. And that was again the same kind of like, oh, that feels good. And after that, I want more of that. you know, I don't have bruises anymore on my body. I am present, I see the furniture, I see stuff. it's really being caught up in this thing. And it's also how I'm practicing getting in touch with my, first it comes from the body, just being with my body sensations, being in this moment, and this is how I get in touch with the, they say, in the body, and then this is an anchor to then getting in touch with the feelings. And feelings, that's the voice of the higher power. In the beginning, it was very subtle, and sometimes I really don't know, is it higher power, you know, or it's this cunning, thing, talking wants me to do something, but I really pray and ask, okay, higher power guidance, what is it you want me to do? But you know what, that subtle voice of feelings, it becomes louder the more I am willing to stay with that, the more I am willing to practice that, and you know, life became much more better. Very much more better, even though, first of all, that my state of being, like complete peacefulness and calmness, and then it also changes on the contrary, like in terms of, I don't know, financial people I am communicating with, the way I am communicating to people. You know, I noticed that, unfortunately, it's not very pleasant to talk to members of my family, like women, control freaks, I am kind of, I totally get it, I used to be myself like this, and when I started noticing that, and I actually have that in myself, and I kind of was intentionally working, and I'm still working, obviously that stuff popping up, how am I talking to people, what am I saying, how am I saying, and really keeping boundaries, where is my business, where is not my business, and this controlling thing, it's kind of the way to stay out of away from myself, because inside of me everything is so much hurting that I need somebody to distract. And guess what? An alcoholic is actually perfect for that. I just sense the energy, and I, in my subconscious mind, that I know that that's going to be a lot of fun there. It's like, yeah, emotional roller coaster. Try to control uncontrollable. Try to control unmanageable. What you're gonna get? All that. Okay. Thank you. the positive thing that as more I'm calming down, I'm feeling better. I'm willing to listen to my loving higher power, asking for guidance. I really hope for that, and I know actually I don't need a hope. I know that it guides me to the better, ever evolving my life, and it wants only good for me, like a loving parent wants for a child, only the best, wishes only the best for the child. Yeah, you know, it's like I have a lot of gratitude for this program. A lot of gratitude for what's happened to me in my life, what's been, what I have been through, and I have gotten so much more gratitude for just for this present moment. I can't tell how much I'm just enjoying to be here and now, and I actually don't really need that much to control anybody or that, you know, like a roller coaster stuff thing. I just feel like here and now. It's good. It's totally different quality of life, and it's working. If you work at it, it's just continuing to take steps, willingness to be humble, and willingness and really desire to listen for the guidance and listen for the higher power. And I want to say thank you, everybody, for coming here today, for listening. And thank you for having me, and with that, I'll end my speech.